Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and other assorted topics. I even talk a little bit about the elections that are coming, since tonight's show is joining and balancing the two sides of spirit, or put another way, of God's thought. Or if you really were going to get technical, two out of three are the parts of God's mind. So how's that for saying it in many different ways? And it actually does have a little bit to do with, I mean, it has a lot to do with everything, but it has a little bit to do with the present election in the United States, because the two parties in the United States are maybe strangely, or maybe not so strangely, aligned on one side or the other of this part of spirit that we're going to talk about, or if you want, God's thought. So let me tell you, or let me define for you what the two sides are. Those of you who have listened to the show before, of course, probably already know that. You could say, oh, I know, I could say it. Okay, but I'll say it for the rest of the folks who are listening in and may not have heard me say it before or forgotten. And that is that when we're talking about spirit, we're talking about, again, thought, which is God's thought, and it involves, on one side, the beginning side, we'll say, the first part of God's thought, deals with the following. Now, I'm going to name some names. These are like forms of thought to just give you an idea to begin with. You ready? Freedom, creativity. Yeah, those are biggies, aren't they? Choice, will, which is the consistency of choices that some one or thing, something is making. And put into a kind of a generalized position, we can also call it the first type of energy that is eventually created beyond the thought itself. So that's the and that's those words, as they generally are construed, tends to be the first side of spirit. You say, well, those are all good things. They sound like they're pretty interesting, right? Then what's the second side? If the first side are those things, and they generally, a lot of people would say, well, those sound like they're okay. Then why does what's the joining and balancing part with the second side? And the second side, I'm going to name some words so that you can get an idea of what I'm going to be talking about. All right. So here we go. Think of it as love, planning, giving. Okay. You with me so far? Inclusiveness. Yeah, that's a kind of, I like that word. It's really a great word. And if you were to put it in terms of an energy kind of a result, something that has a form to it of some sort, or just a movement energy, that would be the concept of the second type of energy that is created in our universe. And particularly in the part of the universe where energy exists. There's some parts of the universe that actually energy does not exist. Okay, so those two parts of spirit and, at the same time, God's thought, need to be joined together. And they need to be done so in a way that balances them. Now, what do I mean by joining? Let's start with that. Why do they have to be joined? Why can't they just hang out and not really get along with each other? Because if you don't join them, you don't have thought. And since spirit is God's thought, if you don't have any thought, then the unjoined elements of spirit no longer represent anything about God. Wow. So the weird thing about this is, let's use an example. Let's say I'm a person who just really believes in planning, nothing but planning this, planning everything, always planning, planning, planning. But I totally reject all of the side of, we'll call it the first part of spirit. So I say, I'm into planning, but I don't want to be into creativity. I don't want creation. I don't want to be into freedom or liberty. I'm against choices and people exerting their choices. Forget it. I'm just for planning. Well, now I've taken one of the sides of God, and oddly, I have eliminated God. I've taken part of God's thought that was existent, but just by emphasizing only one element of that second part of God's thought, I end up with zip, no God. And you could say, well, couldn't you make some kind of thought? Yeah, it's possible. But remember here, and this is an interesting element to the joining process, the more of the words that I used, and let me add a few so that you have some better ways of getting this, on the second part of the process, the second part of God's thought, I could add the words understanding and consciousness. I didn't put them in there deliberately to begin with, because the more of those kinds of words you have, the more it makes it closer to being God. The less of the words you have, let's say you only have planning, and you take out everything but planning, God's gone. And this is very, very important. The reason I'm starting with this is because it's the nature of the problems we're facing today in our political system and a lot of other things. Or let's go to the other side. Let's say, oh, yeah, okay. I'm just going to be a creator. I have a lot of creation. But forget about freedom. Don't need any freedom. I'll enslave people or do whatever. And let's say I also, in my creations, I... What the heck with this business about people having free will? No way. You know, I'm just going to be my creations are all that matter. Yeah, that's it. Guess what? God's gone. That's right. God's gone. So you got to have a lot of these different words that really represent a lot, much larger concept put together to balance out the two sides. The less of those words that I'm using, which really represent much bigger concepts, the less the balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happens. Let me use a political and slash economic explanation for those of you who know something about that. There are some forms of economics and politics that use a heavily, we'll say, planning element to them. Really, get in there and plan the heck out of everything. And they ignore all the other parts of that second part of spirit in God's thought. And they turn out to be things like communism, socialism. Yeah, really, no kidding. And I don't think too many people are going to say, whoa, that isn't God, is it? So you start losing some of God as soon as you start restricting this big picture. And when the dark side, evil, we'll call it, wants to fool us, wants to make us propagandized, lying, but yet we're not quite sure what they're saying and we get fooled, they use one or two of the words, the concepts, and leave the rest alone, and we get fooled. You see. Candidates do this sometimes. The last presidential election, you may have heard some of this. And when it happens, we get fooled. Because we think one or two of these words are all that matters, when someone's trying to present a spiritual thought, God's thought, to us. But we got to go a lot deeper and got to think more and check it out. Now, what do these two sides actually do? I mean, the first side actually provides, we'll call it the creation, literally, of beings. So, although we talk about creation and creativity, the bottom line is the creation of being. Yes. And what that beingness is going to do is determined by the second side. It gives direction to the being. So the being says, well, I'm here, but I don't know what I'm doing. And then the second part, the part that has the inclusiveness, the understanding, the consciousness, the planning, all of those things gives direction to what that being is going to be. And so this is fascinating, because if you take the two together, you can see that God and we and all of life is actually self-created. Self-created because it comes from spirit, and spirit actually joins with form in the lower realms of the universe where we are. And so it does this to express what? Expresses us. So in reality, spirit, by being underneath the surface, is really us, and it is us self-creating us, making us be. At the same time, it is giving direction to the creation. Direction means that there is a limitation on who and what we are for the benefit of making us unique in some ways and individual. If you don't have these two joined together and balanced, you lose that. You lose individuality. And you could say, oh, really? You lose individuality? Yes, you lose individuality because beingness needs direction to be an individual. And you can do it in either side of the fence. You can do it by limiting people's freedom, cutting off their choices, or you can do it by actually just doing only planning and forcing people to not have love, consciousness, understanding. And that also leads to the same effect. I hope this is making some sense. I know it's complicated. Notice I'm going slow because this is a big deal. It's a big deal because it has to do with something called the pairs of opposites. What are the pairs of opposites? Well, it has to do with the fact that we think mentally. We don't think like God. We are much more narrow in our ability to think. We think in concepts and forms of thought, sometimes referred to just as thought forms. Those thought forms are an example of a concept. So we really think in concepts is the best way to describe it, since the other things are just examples of them. And so it's this conceptual thinking which makes us relatively limited, and let me explain why. Despite the fact that we are spirit, and spirit is a wonderful thing, and it has to do its job, which is to join with energy, the energy of the monastic or mental realm, where we think, is not in good balance with spirit. This causes spirit to kind of split itself into its constituent parts, creating something called the pairs of opposites in the higher mental realm where concepts are actually produced. And what I'm telling you is sort of a nuts and bolts explanation of why we as human beings have such a hard time in getting our concepts completely whole and therefore, in spiritual thought, thinking the way God thinks. So we fool ourselves. We literally mistake thought that is away from God because it doesn't contain these balances of the words I used into believing that it does because our thought is too limited. It comes from a place some people call the third subworld of the mental world, where part of our mind works in a very limiting type of concept that's a non-spiritual concept. A lot of people think mostly in non-spiritual concepts. And so when we do, we're plagued by this thing called the power of opposites, where we really can't understand spiritual thought. We can't recognize God's thought. And that really leads us into illusion, which means getting wrong concepts that lead us into and away from God into darkness. Okay, so that is a kind of in a nutshell, and it's a very quick, actually, explanation considering the difficulty of construing this huge concept, God's thought, huge concept, to even grasp. And I'm going to talk about a whole bunch more about it. So even though you may not have gotten this purely conceptual explanation, by the time I'm done today, I'm going to talk about a lot of examples that will help you to understand much better. Even though right now it's sort of like a fog for some people. They're saying, what is he talking about? I heard the words. I can't. Yeah, it'll come out better. It will. Okay, but for right now, I like to start with definitions. I like to start with concepts while your minds are fresh out there. Because I know an hour from now, everybody's going to be, is he still talking? What did he say now? Yeah. So I don't know. It could burn people out, you know. So even with the commercials and all my other jabbering, it still does it. Okay, so let's go to some examples. I love this stuff now. You're going to like this too. All right. Let's talk about God. I like God. I like talking about God. God is this being, and it created itself. It created itself out of a field of infinite possibilities. And it said, you know, this is who I am. It chose within its field of infinite possibilities to be a being greater than we can imagine, a being capable of creating a universe just like the one we live in. It created the universe. And then it decided, after it created the universe, because that was part one of its main directions to begin with, is I think I'll create a universe because I'm God. Okay, but not just any old God. It's a physical-type universe God, for whatever that means to some of you might. And so it says, yeah, that's a really kind of, we'll call it the basic level of being God, is to create a physical universe. There are other kinds of universes that are far more interesting and complicated. And the God of our universe will probably create one of those sometime. But right now, it's working on this God and this universe. So this universe is just amazing because God created it. And then it said, well, now I got a universe. That's terrific. I want the universe to grow, and I want to grow. But it came up with an immediate problem. An immediate problem was that it can't grow if it's the only thing growing. Because everything that exists comes from God then, and God already is the totality of all that it can be. Because it has already chosen from an unlimited field the limitations that it has made into itself. In order to create individuality in itself, it had to choose a direction. And the direction in this case is this universe. You might say, well, God's limited? How could God be limited? God's only limited by its own choice. So actually, it's unlimited. It's a very strange thing, isn't it? And that gave it individuality. It made it both a being and a being with individuality. But God said, you know what? Individuality is terrific, but it's rather lonely. I'm looking out there and there's nothing but me. So then God said, I think I'm going to do something to kind of balance this whole thing out. I'm going to also create life. And life will be part of me as well. But I'm giving, and I'm giving life, the freedom to create itself, the freedom to become individual, while it also finds me, just the way I'm finding it in my own creation. So the weird thing about this is God is creating collection, a collective of all life, while it's also becoming more of an individual at the same time. That's what it chose to do for itself. And guess what the life does, if it chooses to, as well? Amazingly, it becomes an individual while, at the same time, it is connecting and finding more and more of its creator, first in very minimal ways, where it doesn't really understand God at all, but nonetheless, in a collective way, it begins to eventually recognize that all life is part of God, and God is the being that did all this in the universe. You have to be at least a human being to start recognizing that part of the process. So life below humans, they can't get to that concept. That's too big for them. But humans can, and it's really cool. So here's this amazing thing. The life that God creates emulates, eventually, its creator. And not only does so, but does so in a conscious way eventually. And it's so wonderful because this means that the life that is human, us, we can eventually do two things at the same time if we keep them joining and balanced. And that is, we can become more individual while we are also becoming more one with all by becoming more one with God. Wow. Tell me that isn't cool. And in a way, it's also saying the more we become spiritual, which is God's thought, the more we understand God, the more we can co-create with God, both sides of the two things that I talked about, the two parts of spirit, and we're becoming individuals at greater and greater levels while we're also becoming inclusively one with God and everything else. And there's no contradiction in that if you can understand how I just explained it. And that's how you start to join those things I told you about called the pairs of opposites. As a matter of fact, that particular pair of opposites is when it's fully joined, fully, makes a person almost not human anymore. It's called the conundrum and solving of the fetters of the third initiation. Now you might say, why? What do you say? Holy crazy stuff. No, when somebody really takes and goes on into this thing called an initiatory process of leaving the human kingdom, they are actually getting this pair of opposites to the point where it joins in their mind, and they become amazingly open-minded because they realize that there is such a thing as becoming more individual while you're also becoming more one with all without there being contradiction. It's a big deal to get that, by the way. And it isn't just about intellectualizing or being able to repeat what I said. It's about being able to live it. If you can live it, it's a big deal. And then if you can complete the whole process, I mean, and a few other assorted things, you actually leave the human kingdom. I mean, it's sort of like this is a major step. So it's no small thing to talk about joining that particular pair of opposites that plagues human beings and has for a long time. We're going to talk about this, how it applies to politics, because we have an election coming up in the United States that actually right now we're in the midst of this terrible paradox, and a lot of people are confused. All right, so let's move on. So guy got some other ideas. You know, I mean, once you start getting into the knack of this business of creating life and having these two parts of your own thought, which is two out of three parts of your own mind, it's a huge thing, you start saying, you know, I want some of this life to really have, we'll say, a little push, a little bit of help to get these two sides of my thought. So I think that for some life, even the majority of life in certain circumstances, I'm going to create sex. And the sex is going to be along the two parts of spirit, which is my own thought. And so the first sex will be what we call male. And that will be freedom. That will be creation, creativity, will, all that stuff will be the dominant element in it, will be what I call male. That's what male is it has those concepts, not excluding the others, because remember, then you just end up with some kind of darkness and evil, but balanced with the other. But the dominant, slightly dominant element is the first part of spirit. And there happens to be one extra dimension to the universe that's greater than the female part. You might say, well, that doesn't sound fair. Why didn't God make them both even? I'll explain that in a minute. So then God said, well, okay, now we got the male thing going. I like the female. Let's get the female thing going. So female thing is love and planning and understanding and consciousness, and direction and just all the warm, fuzzy stuff, that gives direction to the male aspect. And you can say, well, that's cool. It makes a lot of sense. Okay, yeah. You might say, well, what about this business about the male having an extra dimension? I mean, that sounds like an unfair deal, right? They should be equal. And here's the interesting part about it. If you go into the logic, especially if you're dealing with a thing called quantum physics and other elements of physics, you find that you can't have a totally equal system because you end up with a lockup. And the system becomes inoperable. Now you might say, well, who came up with that? Well, I think it was God, you see. The whole point of this circumstance is that you want there to be a kind of leading and following circumstance. I don't want you to think I'm making this sound like women can't lead, because that's absolutely not true. But there is a leading and a following aspect, and there needs to be that, because if there isn't, you can end up with, in a number of circumstances, and inevitably in all circumstances, there being a literal standoff, particularly when you're dealing with an energy universe, because you can end up with one energy totally balanced by another energy, and nothing happens. So I kind of wanted things to keep moving, you say. This is a universe of movement. If you're going to create movement, by definition, in physics, one side has to be a little more than the other side, or you don't get movement. And this is, by definition, a physical universe, a universe that has to do with energy moving, you see. And so in order to establish that energy would move and keep moving, it had to be done in this way. Now, in the lowest part of the energy or physical universe we're in, where we are right now, it's called the dense physical or etheric or electromagnetic dense physical part of the universe. We physicists have discovered the following thing, that in the beginning, there was like two kinds of basic matter, we'll call it. There was regular matter and there's antimatter. But interestingly, there wasn't an equal amount. There was a little bit more of the matter than there was the antimatter, and because of that, we had the Big Bang and all the other stuff. If there was exactly an equal amount, there would be nothing. Homeostasis, there would be, but there would be no growth. there would be no movement, no form of communication and intelligence that could be derived, because everything is locked in a stasis. So you see, God knew this, of course, and created it, actually. And so this is the system that we're working under. And so don't think that this is a, like, females don't have the same kind of opportunity. And when it comes to consciousness, God wanted to make sure that all living things that work on sexual function and develop any form of consciousness do so through a balance between masculine and feminine. And when you get to human beings, the only way to achieve this is that one soul has literally hundreds of lifetimes with approximately, but not exactly, a near equal amount of male and female incarnations. Wow. So that explains why that would work that way, you see. It isn't just like God just said, well, that sounds pretty good to me, I'll try that. No, this is all fits together because you need to have it in order to have this balance going on in spirit. Because human beings are really trying to develop spiritual thought in three lower realms below that of where their soul exists, the lower mental, the astral, and the etheric or electromagnetic physical realm, where we are right now, by the way. And so we come into these realms, and we start at the physical, which is the lowest, and then we work our way up. And when we do this, through each full lifetime, which is actually the physical, astral, and lower mental parts together, for each lifetime, that lifetime is of one sex. And when we come back, we may change sex. But the average is you go through three. And some souls go through a series of threes and the switch. Sometimes they don't for various reasons of karmic and other aspects. And they mix it up. So if you are male now, there's been a lifetime, I can almost guarantee, where you've been female, and vice versa. And this is to keep a balance in spiritual thought, because if we get imbalanced, then it's harder for us to communicate with the connecting kind of alter ego part of our soul that we have some communication with, and including our conscience. And it would be more difficult for us to do that if we didn't develop both sides more evenly. Very interesting stuff. I find it so fascinating. So sexuality now becomes a major player in developing a joining and balancing to the two sides of spirit. And I bet you didn't think of it that way, did you? And this is the most fascinating thing about sexuality to me, is that the real, you know, the real foundation of spiritual meaning to sexuality has to do with the building of spirituality by cooperating with someone of the opposite sex. And I know we're going to have some homosexual folks who are going to start questioning some of the things I'm saying right now. I'll get to that. But the point is that this kind of thing is a help. It serves us because it allows us to have better communication with this alter ego part of our soul. Some people call it the solar angel or guide or whatever you want to call it. And it permits us to have a step up by being sexual beings. Now, not all life forms are, because they're usually much more primitive when they're not sexual. But regardless, with humans, it's absolutely a need we have. And for most of our lifetimes, we function in a heterosexual way, which helps us. Now, occasionally, some people, because of issues in their personality, getting into conflict with their self, sometimes in lifetimes before, and then they're reborn with the problem. So it isn't like you can't say it only happens during a person's one lifetime. People get into a position where they start wanting to be sexual with people of the same sex. Problem with that is that it imbalances the spiritual mind. It doesn't mean that they can't, quote unquote, think spiritually. It just means that it makes it more difficult. And one of the things that becomes very difficult is to complete something called an initiation. It's almost impossible, actually. So because of this unfortunate twisting, we'll call it, of spiritual thought that occurs, doesn't make people evil. Does not make them evil people. It just makes it more difficult for themselves. Really. So that's a problem. And sometimes they can't solve it. In other words, it's not necessarily solvable in one particular lifetime, at least a part of a lifetime, while someone's physically alive. Anyway, they might be able to solve it easier in the astral world. But the point is that while this is going on, this balancing of the two sides of spirit are being helped by having sexual feelings, and even better, developing sexual relationship. Now, sexual relationship that is truly spiritual is of tremendous help. However, and this is the caveat here, if the sexual relationship is not spiritual, it can be just as destructive as anything I just said about homosexuality or anything else, because what you're really doing is you're selfishly functioning and you're turning something that should develop a more spiritual side into the negative of it. And this is still the plague of humanity. Humanity has, since virtually its beginning of time on Earth, not gotten this whole thing perfectly right. And so we still suffer through it today. Those people who do get it right may move ahead more easily along their spiritual path. But it's not so easy to do. Why? Because there's a lot of illusion while you're physically alive. It's easier to get over when you get to the astral world. But in the physical world, physical energy kind of contaminates the astral nature, which gives better truth to the subject, and people get confused. Their urges and feelings on a strictly physical side, and this unfortunately is more true for men than women, so men don't have it such an easy time of it, confuses people. And instead of getting the two sides of spirit put together, they get one side only, their side. And the results are sometimes very negative in terms of spiritual development. The very thing that was supposed to, it's God's gift and grace, it's supposed to help you, at least while you're physically alive, can be a hindrance. Like I said, it's oftentimes worked out in the astral world, and if it isn't, there's another shot at it, strangely, in the mental world. Because once you get rid of the contaminating senses from both the astral and physical parts of life, you think more clearly. And there is such a thing as mental sex. It's weird, but there is. But it's way different, and it doesn't contaminate people as much with their own identity sexually. And the results are pretty amazing that people actually do work out oftentimes in that sphere, issues they can't in the lower realms. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and I think we'll take a break right at this point. You let you cool down, let that mind cool down. I said an awful lot in a very short time, 40 minutes, where did it go? And but there's a lot to think about and then a lot more to explain when we come back from right now.
Hun? What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And by the way, thanks for listening in tonight. And I hope that the first 40 minutes didn't burn out any of those brain cells you got. Because some of this is pretty far out there. But for a lot of people that have listened to the show, I think these are questions that deserve some further discovery about. Okay. So while I was off the air, it came to my attention that some people here in my studio wanted to know, what do you mean by mental sex? So I guess I'll give a minute or two on that. Yes, sex does happen even in the mental world. It's hard to understand that because you don't have a physical body. You don't have an astral body. And the only parts of those bodies that exist in terms of sense are fused with the mental and converted into mental energy. It's a little hard to understand what that exactly means. And for right now, I'm not going to explain that part of it. But I will explain what mental sex is about. Mental sex is being able to, we'll say, exchange mental energy in both a conceptual and an example of that concept way with some other person, okay, who is doing it at the same time or near the same time with you. But if you're male, you have this slant, we'll call it, that provides a thought that is more in line with the sub-parts, the sub-planes or sub-world parts of the mental world, which are considered masculine in energy. That's the first, third, fifth, and seventh sub-world parts of both the lower and, well, it's not exactly that way, but we'll call it the lower and higher mental. Because in the higher mental, it's really the mental plane is divided, so it kind of confuses things. Because then you have sub parts, but I won't get into that. So you're just dealing with the male is emphasizing the parts of concepts that have, we'll call it, masculine energy components to them. In other words, the thought that the male is giving to the female is more about freedom, more about creation, more about choices, more about will even. And what the female is giving at near the same time is more love, more about inclusiveness, more about, we'll say, understanding and consciousness. It doesn't mean neither is excluding the other, and neither has nothing to contribute about what the other has. But one is better at one kind of thought, and the other is better at the other. And at the end of the lovemaking, okay, for a brief second, they both have identical levels that we call the climax. Now, you could say, well, wait a second, you're talking about a mental climax? Yeah, I am talking about mental climax. It's so different than a physical, in the physical world, in concept at least. It's way different in terms of the way energy is used, but it's no different in the concept. And so when you reach this homeostasis, we can call it, before you reach the homeostasis, you end up with a tremendous, we'll call it, release of energy. And the release of energy actually moves into a higher realm, one level higher than the one that you may exist on. So it actually like projects your, it's a givingness, your givingness or love, into another dimension of time and space altogether, while at the same exact moment, you're becoming homeostasis, so there's a sense of total oneness with the other person, if you choose to do this right now, and also a sense of complete relaxation, because once you achieve equalness, remember, there's no more energy exchange, until it slightly starts becoming imbalanced as the sexual feelings subside and other types of energies move in. Or it's, I should say, the sexual energies subside, because there are no feelings, really, other than remnants of what we call feelings in the mental world. So that's it. I hope that explains something about it. Of course, we could do a whole show just on that one subject, because it's fairly complicated and much more in detail than what I just explained. But, yes, there is such a thing as mental sex. Wow. Okay. Now, let's continue on. So sexuality is God's way of encouraging spiritual development, provided that it is used in thought along God's thought. So spirit itself is being expressed in the sexuality, and it becomes a spiritual interaction. You can have these spiritual interactions in any body, and there is such a thing as thought in the physical body. Thought in the physical body is actually sharing and cooperation. So anything that involves the basic coordination of one body to another body and the sharing and cooperation of that coordination is thinking at the physical, purely physical level. It's really basic. And for human beings, it's always accompanied by, or nearly always, by some mental thought as well. Because that's what makes it human, is the mental thought connected to it. Animals don't have much of that, and other life forms have almost none of it. So that's the difference between them and us. It's pretty cool. Okay, so God wanted to give us a helping hand, and one of the things he gave us was sexuality. But there's so much more to this whole process than just that one element. When we look at spirit and what spirit is here to do, spirit is supposed to spiritualize energy, because the third part of God's mind is not thought. It's actually energy, or we'll call it intelligent activity. Third part of God's mind is intelligent activity, and then energy becomes the instrument to produce that. Except energy doesn't have any intelligence at the beginning of its development. You see the contradiction there. And in order for the energy to become intelligent, it has to be spiritualized, which is informed by spirit in some way. We call it life forms, right? That spirit informing energy is life forms. And those life forms then have to create some level of increase in intelligent activity than what the energy is naturally doing. And you might say, well, what is energy naturally doing if it isn't doing that? Well, what it naturally does on the most basic of levels is it creates gravity. It just wants to hang out with more energy and grow bigger, and it produces a thing called gravity. It also produces three other kinds of activities. Those kinds of activities have to do with three, we'll call them forces of nature. Two of the activities happen inside atoms, and one of them happens between atoms. That is called electromagnetism. But the other two happen inside atoms. And all the activity in the universe is controlled by those four things. Let me name them for you. They're called the strong and the weak forces of nuclear interaction, and then electromagnetism, and the last is gravity. And that's it. That's what energy does, unless it's spiritualized. Now, when you spiritualize energy, it suddenly changes, and it says, hey, we could do a lot more. And it starts behaving in ways that produces a lot more intelligence to these very basic activities. The electrochemical especially eventually produces everything that we think of as forms in our universe around us. If there was no electromagnetic force, you wouldn't have anything that you see around you. It couldn't exist. So it's very important that these forces exist, because without them, we would not have life at our level of existence. It is absolutely necessary that this takes place. And it has to be spiritualized. And you could say, well, then how do you spiritualize like atoms so they create all the elements? You know, there's so many, you know, 92 natural. You know, and you have these elements that have to come together to produce everything else. That's what spirit does. It does it through a thing called a group soul for minerals. That's what it does. And it makes all the different elements in that way. But the process is rather complicated, because it isn't just, spirit is not just working on its own, it's working from the top down. And there are things called great beings called the ones, the monads, and they are reflecting God's thought and the thought sometimes of beings outside our universe. Can you believe that? The God of our universe is very generous and wants life even outside of this universe to be of some help to growing life within. It's very difficult to grow life, particularly where we are in the physical realm, because here gravity is very powerful and it moves the other forces in a direction, even though it's the weakest, it looks like it's the weakest, it's really not, because when you collect a lot of energy together, you get a large force of gravity, and it tends to overpower the other forces in a number of ways. And the results are that you don't get the balancing of energy that produces intelligent activity, which is the whole goal. The spirit then has to interact through usually group souls, like for minerals, and those group souls find ways for the various types of energy, we call them elements, and sometimes compounds, etc., to interact in ways that are more and more intelligent. And eventually, when humans are around, like us, we can start participating in this ourselves, just the way some types of life forms outside of this universe can do. So that's a really cool thing, that we actually are starting to do this. We can actually start incorporating lower kingdoms as part of our own civilization. And that's very neat. And beyond that, there's this process of acceleration, which is absolutely necessary, or the universe would just be poking along, virtually doing nothing. So spirit is the magic ingredient, God's thought. And God's thought is everywhere unless humans choose to ignore it. Now, in the lower parts, below human development, lower parts of life, they don't ignore it, because the group souls are are not in illusion. They exist in another realm, in the higher mental world, where they don't get into illusion. But here, in this part of existence, we do. Human beings do. And so by our getting into illusion, we choose to ignore spirit, ignore spiritual thought. We become falsely impressioned by the energy itself and start acting as though we're the energy instead of the spirit. Once we do that, we're on the road to darkness and away from God's thought. And it can lead to the thing we call evil. Evil is a form of consciousness which is lower than it should be because it doesn't have a balance in the second part of God's thought, and it therefore doesn't have God's thought. It does have planning sometimes, but in limited scale. And occasionally, it provides direction, but it doesn't have love, not real love, and it doesn't have inclusiveness or understanding, except the very basic kinds. And so consequently, it's by missing those things, it is not part of God's thought. So you can say evil is outside of or separates itself from God. Not because God chooses them, but because God allows it to be. Isn't that a cool thing? I think it is. Okay, so we're going to get into some other examples through the rest of the show. I want to also cover some elements of, we'll say, what this all means in terms of our present situation and where it's leading us in various ways on Earth. Earth is caught in a lot of quandaries right now, dealing with balancing and joining the two sides of spirit. We are not doing the greatest job, and we haven't really done the best job for since virtually most of the time we've been here. It's been millions of years, at least a million, over a million, since we've been doing a really admirable job in balancing spirit. And this is unfortunate because it means we're not as close to God as we could be, regardless of what our religions try to express. The religions, unfortunately, are contaminated by the energy issues and materiality. And this causes them to be as illusioned, unfortunately, as oftentimes we are as individuals. Okay, so I want to give you a little bit more of a rest here. I want to tell you something about soul balance. We're talking about souls. What is soul balance? I think it's a really important word for today's show. Soul balance balances the energies inside our physical and etheric bodies, etheric being part of the physical, so that we will stay healthier and well and help us to fight off and even get rid of some of the imbalances that lead to serious diseases. That's soul balance. It works best on very active forms of disease. Active means like something that's acting strongly on you quickly and producing a lot of forceful effects. It works less well on diseases that are very low level but long acting. Those kinds of diseases, you need a little bit different formula than this one was created for. Although it can be helpful even in those situations, depending upon the circumstances. If you haven't tried it, you should, if you need it. And most people at some point probably will. You can go to the Ageless Wisdom Distributor's website and use one of the numbers there, and you can get a hold of Life Balance Association, who is the people who sell this product. It's a great product. I use it, and I can recommend it. So you should check into it if you can. and see if it's what you really want to try. And in addition, you may know about ideal cellsorption resveratrol with anti-OX20. That's a rosehip extract that's included with resveratrol. It's a very special kind that prevents the resveratrol from very quickly being oxidized and therefore not working. If you haven't tried it, and you've tried other resveratrol and you haven't been that satisfied with it, you should try this product. It really works. I take it every day. So do many other people I know. It is available in a formula for animals, for cats and dogs at least. And that's ideal cellsorption resveratrol-VF veterinary formula. And you can get that from foreveryoungproducts.com, either one of these. And right now they're on special. You can buy them for less than their full retail price. So give them a try if you want to stay younger for a much longer period of time, to actually go backwards in time, in my opinion, in terms of youthfulness. And it may affect other things as well, such as memory losses and other factors that people sometimes experience. There's evidence from animal studies about resveratrol doing this. Big problem about most other resveratrols is they are pretty much worthless by the time you take them, if they ever were good to begin with, because it's very hard to keep resveratrol from oxidizing. Even after you put it in a pill and put it in a bottle, there's still oxygen in that. I want to finish by just mentioning this, that we are still working on, and we're getting much closer to getting the Fichi Jizik done. It's still taking some time because of the remanufacture of all the herbs that were not up to our specs. But those herbs, you know, are critical. Every herb is critical. And even if it was only one, but it happens to be about a half dozen. But even if it's only one, we would be in the same position because we have to have them all made at the same spec and ready to mix together. And there's 61 herbs and 2 nutraceuticals in this formula. So please be patient. We do have the R&D formula, but we don't really want people to start using that. We like you to have the full, real product, which is a tablet rather than capsules. And it's easier to take, and you have to take a lot less of it, and it's just great stuff. I used some this morning, so, you know, just for, we'll call it, the muscle tensions and things, and it works great. It works on just a lot of different things that involve pain, because it's an analgesic. So that means it gets rid of some pain, and in this case, a lot of different kinds, and does so in a fairly effective way, and without virtually any noticing. You don't take it and you get, you know, zapped out or something. You don't feel the formula. You just feel a relief of pain. So hopefully I'm going to stay on the air now. This is live radio, folks. This is what happens. You know, sometimes there's an engineering glitch. There's something going on in line. Who knows? There may be a spurious this or that, and it's happening. Okay, so let's go back to talking about spirit and energy and how spirit is really here to get energy to be intelligently coordinating itself in the physical realm and basically in developing a form of intelligence so that energy and spirit can work together as one. This is the beauty of this whole system. Now, let me explain something about spirit and energy. In a weird way, spirit is to energy, much as the first part of spirit is to the second part. So there's kind of a relationship involved in that. And so you can, some people do and recognize this, think of spirit as being like a masculine kind of thing, we'll call it, and energy being a feminine. And there's some truth to that, because energy follows the thought of spirit. It doesn't just follow any old thought. It follows God's thought. If you try to get energy to follow the thought you have, or, and it's different from God's thought, the only way you can do that is by using force, by using one energy against another energy. And that produces a whole bunch of power, but it gets rid of the spirit issue, and consciousness drops to some extent. That's what evil does, by the way. That's the principle of evil. So evil works on a power principle, whereas God works on the attraction of energy towards its own thought, which is spirit. Energy wants to join with and follow spirit. It's its natural state. Spirit is there to try to raise the intelligent activity of energy. And energy wants that. It's how energy grows. The only other way it can grow is through power. But when it grows that way, it eventually destroys other energy, and it's in conflict. So evil always is in some form of conflict. It's by nature, by its definition, what it does. All right. Let's continue going on with joining and balancing the two sides of spirit. Where does this enter into an example in our society today? And where has it been so in human development, we'll say, for most of the time humans have been around on Earth? And the best way to describe this is that it has been here as part of, we'll say, our nemesis and difficulty in the physical world ever since the time that we interfered with and prevented our thought from being spiritual thought. We do this through our free will. We actually choose to do it because we're illusioned, because the energy that we're trying to sense with overpowers our senses and gives us wrong information. And because we have a thing called a personality, which is controlling us subconsciously, trying to keep us alive. It does some good things, but at the same time wanting to control ourself, our conscious part of us, if the self is starting to become independent from it. So it gets into its own conflict with its existence, with us. It's kind of a weird thing. We're in a struggle, you might say. Spiritual thought resolves the problems between the personality and the self. It does. It's great. But if you choose to not think spiritually, that increases the problems between the personality and the self. And so we have a lot of choices that we make almost continuously in our life, in our lives, that either leads us closer to being joined between ourself and personality and our soul, which eventually leads us to a greater state of freedom and fuller consciousness, or the opposite. We become victims of our personality. It controls us. Our consciousness drops in ourself, mostly because we cease to give very much, and our connection with our soul is diminished. All because of how we deal with the two sides of spirit. You see, if we just keep them balanced within ourselves and live certain, we'll say, almost perfunctory things, we can maintain a much higher level of connection with God. What are those things? I call them spiritual disciplines. You can follow them without fully understanding them and derive great benefit from them anyway. And it works best when others are helping you to see that you're not following them. So that's why it works good to be in connection with other people who are doing the same thing. We'll call that a spiritual group if you care to. But as long as you have help from outside, you can get through this obstacle course and this great difficulty and paradox of trying to live as a person but connect with your soul and with God and to become more spiritual. Otherwise, the results can be disastrous, because if you don't live spiritually, you end up gaining tremendously negative forces in your life that are karma, that the forces are karma. And they come out in all kinds of ways, including aging and illness and we'll call them accidents. Accidents really come from the damaged senses we gain from not listening carefully to the information enough and checking it for accuracy because we're not following spiritual thought. So that leads to accidents, and it leads to all kinds of bad outcomes. So if we choose to live in a spiritual way and then follow some of these potential tenets that are out there that we can find out about, if you want to know more about them, get the book Life's Hidden Meaning, which I wrote as a textbook on some of that stuff. And it will help you to be able to live in a more spiritual way. But not just what I've written. There's all kinds of other spiritual material that can help a person to do this. And the important fact is that it's readily available, at least in the United States and other freer countries. So here is the options that we have. We can start joining together and balancing the two sides of spirit on an almost moment-to-moment basis and free ourselves from most of the negative parts of living. We can make our life much, much better by literally following some suggestions that I and other people have. And you could do this really without having to, we'll say, make huge sacrifices or without even having to completely understand everything you're doing. It is possible. And that's the good news. The bad news is a lot of people don't choose to do that because there is some sacrifice. It isn't necessarily a tremendous amount, especially at the beginning. And as you get further into it, the greater the sacrifice, the more the return a person notices and they are able to withstand whatever sacrifice they're making. The sacrifice is just giving up those things that stand as an obstacle to becoming more spiritual. That's all it is. You just don't recognize it because of your illusion that that's what you're really giving up. And you think you're giving up something that the personality thinks it needs to be in control of. It's mistaken. You also gain a lot more time. Time to do almost anything that's creative and good. So if you want to have more time, you get more time because you become so much more creative. And remember, the activities that you do become much more intelligent. And the definition of wasted time is a lack of intelligent activity. So you see, as the spirit in you is spiritualizing the energy in you, and you're becoming more intelligent in your activity, you have a lot more time to do creative things. Wow. I know, that's pretty fast. You can re-listen to the show to get all that little bit in there. But it's really a neat area that we have these options at our disposal. And it gives us a whole different, we'll say, way of looking at this question of leading a spiritual life as compared to not leading one. Okay, what are the other areas of our existence that come into play? Well, for a lot of people, while we're physically alive, there is the fear of not having the things we need in order to live in semi or somewhat comfortable ways. And some people aren't living very comfortably at all. So they have this great fear of that problem. And that leads to sometimes a sense of desperation, certainly pain, not necessarily suffering, depending upon how the person responds to the situation. But how do we resolve those situations? Well, here's the answer. When we join together and balance the two sides of spirit, we immediately find creative solutions to these seemingly insolvable problems that involve form. So to solve form problems, you need to have more intelligent activity, which also leads to an economy and savings and leads to ways to create yourself out of whatever forms of lack that you have in some of what people would consider to be semi or complete necessities in their life. Even if you're suffering from major ailments and problems, there are ways around those issues. Sometimes those problems are there because you didn't explore those ways in earlier lifetimes, or maybe earlier in this lifetime. So it is important to recognize that we can make great changes in our life by becoming more spiritual. It is not just some academic question that I'm implying here. Even the way you relate to other people is a critical element in this. Earlier, at the beginning of the show, we talked about sexual relationships, but spiritual thought involves all kinds of relationships. And every form of relationship has within it the capacity for those relationships to either lead to a greater balancing and joining together of spirit, or a lack. If the balance and joining happens between two or more people, there is exponential growth in the people than if they were alone and not together. This is a very important spiritual concept. Again, it doesn't have to be just sexual. It can be in numerous, infinite possibly, ways of co-creating and creating more virtue or light in form. Remember, light is another way of describing God's thought. So as form is enlightened, then the people involved themselves, their own bodies, are becoming enlightened. And their existence, all the form that they come into, bring into, have contact with in their lives are becoming enlightened. And their lives become much easier. The time they have to create becomes much greater because they make much fewer mistakes. And their ability to coexist with others is enhanced. Loneliness goes away and love tremendously increases. Can't beat those things, can you? That's amazing outcomes from just joining and balancing the two sides of spirit. And most spiritual disciplines involve this very action. It doesn't matter if we're talking about a specific type of yoga or a specific type of, we'll say, discipline in either the physical, astral, or mental realm. It's always the same issue, balancing the two sides of spirit and joining them together in ways oftentimes that are unique for you, that creates more virtue, more light and form, inside you and inside others. Eventually, if you do enough of this building and you're a human being, you start doing it at levels that has a long life to it. When it has a long life to it and it affects the senses of yourself and many others, then it starts becoming a new kind of virtue called beauty, which is a virtue beyond where humans usually function, into the Buddhic or intuitional realm. Once that starts, that type of spirit is all-encompassing of the spirit below it, and unlike the energies that are found in the mental and lower worlds, the energy that is in the intuitional world automatically follows and connects to all beings and their senses that exist in that world. You start becoming truly, magically, one as you're becoming a super being individual at the same time. This whole thing gets really big. And so you're getting a oneness because you're sharing the senses of many other beings, superhuman beings, while you're co-creating them. Sharing their senses, and they're sharing yours, while you are also becoming an individual at a much faster and amazing rate. Remember, that's not a paradox. That's any longer to those people. That's just a way of living. Wow. That sounds cool. I think it's really neat. And it's how you leave the human kingdom eventually, by your own doing as well. Okay, so if we're going to be successful in this process, then learning from those who have gone before us usually is part of the system. Because you don't want to have to reinvent the wheel of how to join and balance the two sides of spirit in infinite numbers of ways, virtually, when others can be of great assistance. That's why I'm on the radio talking to you. I think that I might be of some assistance. If I didn't think so, I wouldn't be here, right? But I am. Okay, so you have this great gift that is all over the place. I mean, there's so much to be gained in learning and studying this process and becoming a part of it. I hope this is exciting to you. It is to me. I really, really like this part. Where has it fallen down in our society where we can pick it up? Well, any place that virtues existed that have diminished are places that we can get in there and create or co-create together to improve. Some of these areas involve the relationship of humans to each other, obviously. For many, many, before recorded history time, for many, many millennia, we have done much more battling with humans as being human beings than we have really worked together. Why is that? Because of this great illusion, and because evil has really gotten a pretty strong hold on the planet. Too many people have been evil over too long a period of time, and so evil now has its own, we'll say, foundation area in the astral world. And the door to it is open to the physical world by beings like us doing terrible things and not following enough in leading virtuous lives. So the spiritualization of energy has been grinding to a halt. And this is scary. I want to use the United States as an example for right now. Because I know some of you are not living here, but still you look to this country, many of you have, as being a leading country, if not the leading country, in trying to produce some level of virtue. The United States was founded by some really great spiritual disciples. Matter of fact, the largest number of spiritual disciples ever to get together to create a country did so at the beginning of this one. And some of them were amazingly advanced people. But the most important thing is they really worked together. And they tried to come up with answers to age-old problems. Some of those answers were to have people be free and to see God as the creator of the universe, with them being co-creators, and therefore having the right to individual lives and creative lives, and to be their own destiny, because they are, as God created them, as life, self-created in their own right, in the way of life that they choose to create. So life was started by God, but after that, each part of life decides its own meaning and its own existence. So this was part of this great country's inception. It was meant to be, because these great thinkers and these great spiritual people, both, put together a constitution, a declaration of beingness called the Declaration of Independence. And the independence was not independence of that ever working together. It was independence from tyranny. And so that's what the independence was from. Tyranny is part of evil. And the other thing that this country was founded on, the principle, was free markets and free enterprise. Now, what does that mean? Well, a free market means that people can express their industry, how or their time and energy, by producing goods and services that others can exchange through either money or for barter some form of their goods and services. Money is compressed time and energy, so if you use your own time and energy to produce some industry that produces some kind of product or service, that's the same thing as bartering. It's really no difference if the money has an equal value to both people, or both individuals. So this was the first thing, free markets. Very important, because you can't have, if you don't have free markets, you can't have freedom of industry. You can't have freedom, when I say industry, I mean of an individual's industry. It could be also industry in a collective sense of individuals. But you can't have freedom. And if you can't have freedom, you can't have joining of the two sides of spirit, because they won't balance, and you get a problem. Okay. Then you have tyranny. You've heard me use that word before, but maybe you didn't understand how I was using it. The other thing is, you need to have free enterprise. That the type of creativity that each individual does is their choice. Not the choice of some government agency or some school or some even parent. It's the choice of the individual what they want to spend their time and energy on in their life. So you need free markets and free enterprise. If you don't have those two, you couldn't have a country that was godly. Okay? God goes away and you end up with something else. So that's a good thing. But the bad thing about this was, in my opinion, that while these great people did tremendous work, they were more affected by a personal interest in God. It's called the six-ray kind of interest. Because that's the personality expression of the United States. It's this kind of six-ray, very religious, very devoted to God. But the soul aspect of this country, which has to be developed through great periods of time and tremendous, unfortunate struggles, is a long education in the second way. And this type of expression has been lacking in our country, tremendously lacking since its inception. Yes, it is true that schools and free schools were set up, but the teaching of those schools, the teaching in those schools, was never quite to the level, although there were religious schools, some of them private, some of them semi-public, but they didn't get to the point of describing what I just spent the last part of the show talking about. They didn't teach about the necessity for free enterprise. They didn't teach about the necessity for free markets as much as they should have, and why it's so important to get close to God that way. In other words, you can't have religion sustain itself just based upon devotion. There needs to be some level of education so that the person gains consciousness about what the religion is about. This has been lacking in the United States history. And today, it's worse than ever. And it has led to an imbalancing in the two sides of spirit. So much so that we're about to fail as a country because of that. We're here to become souls as a country and to exhibit a soul nature. That soul nature needs to understand what the value of everything that was given to us as a country is, so that we can not only protect it, but co-create more of it together. and do so in a fully conscious way, which we haven't been doing. We haven't been doing any of that. And that's a huge, huge mistake. There are darker elements in our society who want to drive out all the understanding that I'm expressing to you this evening and make education into a thing about knowledge rather than about consciousness. These elements ultimately want to control others, and they want to enslave the people in this country. Some of them are very wealthy people. Some of them, and majority of them, are in politics. And the problem that we're having is that we're not seeing that they're separating the two sides of spirit in our thought and leading us into a road of disaster. It's why we have such a split in our politics, because both sides are missing the big picture. They're not seeing God. One side may espouse more of God in a more religious fashion, but neither of the sides are really understanding the true nature of the conflict. And so the conflict is becoming greater. And those that are dark are taking over. It's scary. They're going to do so by destroying the economy, which will lead to a socialistic and communistic type of government with tyranny, and eliminate much of the free market system and even more of the free enterprise system. They're going to destroy almost all small businesses, which are really the birthing place of most small enterprise. Not all enterprise has to be business, by the way. But in this country, a significant portion of it is. And so the results are looking very disastrous if we don't make some changes. And I don't want this to be some kind of political expose, but I do think that it is germane on the eve of probably the last election that can make a difference in what is coming, to at least talk about it. So how do we get back to God's thought? By all turning into conservative Republicans? No, because that's not the solution either. I mean, again, you've got the representation of the six-ray element, but not enough of the second ray, so you're still imbalanced. Then you become closed-minded about some things that shouldn't be run by government. What are those things? Telling people what to do with their bodies. Period. I don't want anyone telling anybody what foods they should eat, which we're hearing more and more of in the last few months, or what anything they do with or to their bodies. But that also has to include whether or not someone has a right to get an abortion. I don't like abortions. I don't think they're the right way of going about the problem. But the point is that you gotta look at both sides of the equation. If you're going to have freedom, then freedom means just that. People can choose to do things maybe you don't like them doing. Are there better answers? Sure, but let's deal with those answers through education and not through governmental actions. Let's get rid of the government in our lives, not keep it laying around to become tyrannical. The people that want to run our lives are arrogant. They are infested with arrogance. They believe they know better, they think better, they understand better, and they understand less. and their knowledge is flawed with tremendous, tremendous wrong information, amounts of wrong information. And even the things that they think they know and that might be correct, their application of the knowledge and the use of it is terrible, forcing people to stop eating potatoes was last week. Okay, potatoes, the poor potato. Now the potato's getting the bad rap. I guess they'll take Mr. Potato Head off the market, too. I mean, we're talking crazy things here, folks. Crazy stuff. In case you didn't hear, yeah. The Obama administration wants you to stop eating potatoes, and they're going to remove it from schools. Bye-bye french fries. But also bye-bye plain old potatoes of any sort. Is that nuts? Or is it tyrannical? All right. So here are some issues. And I brought those subjects up because those are contentious things about the abortion. And so, contentious things. Those have been the social issues. The interesting issue today is no longer social. It's economic. Why? Because if you want to take over a country, you can't take over a country based on social issues. You can only take over a country based upon two factors, militarily or economically. And right now, the military isn't in any condition, probably, isn't more likely going to produce a coup here. So the next possibility is economics. And the people that want to do this generally follow the doctrines of what are called the Fabian socialists. This is a group of socialists from the 19th century, circa around 1870, 1875. Fabian was a colonel. He had his own ideas about how an economy and government should be run. What is it they're trying to do? Well, this Fabian Society, it's headquartered in London, is ahead of it, basically. And what is it trying to do? Well, it wants to run the economies of all countries by planning and organizing. Organizing is a lower level, a physical level of planning. And taking it to, joining the two together in a weird way. It's a masculine and feminine joining, actually. To replace God's thought. Okay. God's thought is a free market system of free enterprise. This thought is get rid of free enterprise and markets and to tell people what they're best at doing and make sure they do it. Maybe how long they're going to do it for, and then maybe even when they should die. But then in addition to that, beyond that, to enforce control of all industry and to make it so that markets are predetermined by the needs of the government, which needs are mostly to be in control. The government becomes the super personality of all, and it's run by a few who think they're better than everybody else because they're arrogant son of a guns. Yeah. There are 28 countries that have leaders that are known to be members of the Fabian Society. The present leader of the Fabian Society, as far as is known, is Barack Obama. Now, I think that it's important to realize that no matter what you think about any particular person or president or whatever, I'm not describing their personal interests necessarily. I'm only telling you that if someone wants to be a socialist, they are going against the tenets of what this country, the United States, was founded on. There are some democratic socialist countries, relatively small, where socialism semi-works. Usually you have to have less than a few million people for that to work out. But it doesn't work forever. And the countries pay a great toll in the development of the people's consciousness, as well as in the development of their economy. People usually are stricken with less, and they give that up, so to speak, for what they think is security. You can't be totally secure and have growth. Growth requires a good deal of unfortunate risk. But risk is a good thing because it provides people with the opportunity to create new and better ways of existing. You notice I don't want to emphasize fear because real fear is just the fear of death. Underlying everything is a fear of death. And there's no reason to be afraid of death. We all are going to die. It's really how we live here that matters. And by joining and balancing the two sides of spirit, God's thought, inside of us, and then expressing it outside through the creation of virtue, we live the best and most meaningful way. You've heard me say this in recent weeks. This is very important to put in perspective, because some people say, well, if I do what you say, how do I know it's going to make a real difference? Well, the difference is meaning first. There's been a recent study, I saw it on Fox News, and that study showed that people who are very enterprising and participate in the free market system as best as they can within this country are the happiest, even though they work harder and longer and sometimes don't make any more money net than some other people who aren't. Why is that the case? Well, it's the case because it's about meaning. Life is about the meaning that a person gets, and the hidden meaning of life is spirit, becoming spiritual. And if you don't know that, if you don't really understand that, you may think that the meaning in life is to control other people, to have power and authority, and to have your ideas and thoughts put into action no matter how terrible and destructive they are, and to destroy the other people's ability to do great things, be creative beings, and become individuals themselves while they still are growing one with all. You think everything is a zero-sum game, that you have to get more power and other people have to have less. As you become more great, others must lose their greatness. This arrogant attitude has permeated our entire government, and the people who are in that are also corrupt. They believe in a material existence. They seek power to control others rather than the persuasion of ideas and the collective working together, which they don't seek. They seek to organize and to get people to be energized by their power rather than by their thoughts. That's evil, folks, and that's tyranny. So, we're running out of time for right now. I guess next week, when I'm on Friday of next week, we'll know the outcome of this coming election, and I think we're going to know where we're headed. Not that this election will solve all the problems, but you got to go start down a path, at least in some direction, that goes in a place that makes more sense than that. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.